Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
Hey, hey, back at it again for another edition of the recap show from the National Club Conference in Los Angeles. This is number 3 in our series. This will be the last one where we cover what happened over there in LA at the National Club Association's conference. We've got, once again, just a packed lineup for you. First off, talking with Frank Vane of the McMahon Group. We're also going to talk with Bill McMahon Jr. of the McMahon Group a little later in the episode. We're going to speak with Mike Stachura. So for all you golf fans out there, Mike Stachura is the lead equipment reviewer for Golf Digest. He's going to talk about what's going on in terms of improvements to the game. We're also going to hear from Jeff McFadden of the Union League Club of Philadelphia, a club that is at the forefront of innovation. You're going to be amazed at what they've got going on there. And that's not all. We're going to speak with John Harvey of EA Photography so you can find out why it's important to have consistency at your club. So much good information to be spouted off here on this episode. Sit back, relax, and here we go. So my first guest that I'm going to bring you today is Jeff McFadden of the Union League Club of Philadelphia. Jeff has done some remarkable things at his club. First off, they're buying up different clubs around the area. So now they have a beach club, they've got golf courses, they've got other amenities for their members. It's not just a city club. And the other thing that's happening is that they have created this system for their members that's very similar to an Uber. So if they want to have a ride or some kind of ride sharing, they can tap into their own custom Uber-like system. That's the first thing I asked Jeff about, and here's what he had to say about it.
Just like a car share.
Yeah, that's
program.
Great.
It works great.
Yeah.
Especially because, we're becoming more and more urbanites. You know, about 89% of Americans live in downtown environment today. By 2030, about 93% will live in a downtown environment.
Oh my goodness.
So it's pretty good.
Wow. What's causing that shift?
Well, I think it's lifestyle. So What happens is those who say are over the age of 45, you know, really value things, stuff, large homes,
right,
mansions, that sort of thing.
Sure.
And millennials and Generation X and those below or younger, they value experiences, lifestyle,
right,
healthcare, spending. They're not impressed with a $10 million home,
yeah,
10 bedrooms.
Right.
So they don't care. They want to know, you know, where'd you go on vacation?
Sure.
What did you read?
Right.
You know, did you go to Spain? Did you go to Abu Dhabi? Did you go to Malaysia? Where did you go?
Yeah, right,
that
right.
Sort of thing.
What are you most proud of over your tenure at Union Club?
I think I'm most proud in that we built a culture as, you know, as being an exclusive club, but at the same time expanding our amenities and offering the club of tomorrow in a club that was built 155 years ago.
Right.
So it's, you know, really, you know, taking the traditional old values of the club, mm-hmm, and what it stood for and then modernizing it and being successful in that. And so we're really proud of that. And
that's awesome.
Of course, we now have, you know, we went from 60 employees to 600 employees.
That's
and
incredible.
So it's nice to be an economic engine too.
Yeah, exactly.
See folks,
right,
you know, succeed.
Yeah, so let's talk about the properties that you've taken on and you've expanded.
So we have 5 properties now. Obviously, the heart and soul of the Union League is 140 South Broad Street, right in the middle of Center City. And we have 2 independent, kind of very authentic, hip restaurants, one on the main line and then one down the shore. The one down the shore is open only Memorial Day to Labor Day. Very exclusive, can't get in. You know, it's only 80 seats. And then the one on the... In the main line is called the Guardhouse. It was built in 1790.
Wow.
So the ceilings are like 6 feet and below. So
very colonial looking,
exactly,
I take it.
Exactly, it is. So, and that's sort of the yin to the yang of the bungalow, which, mm-hmm, is the name of the restaurant down the shore. The Guardhouse is like the winter place. So it has 5 rooms, seats about 90 people with 7 fireplaces. So each room only has like somewhere between 18 and 22 seats.
Yeah. Do you find that your members kind of go around to each one, or do some just hang at one particular property?
No, I think in the restaurants themselves, they use them as authentic experiences for dining.
Yeah.
It's basically just, it's another way to add value to their dues dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So like the other two properties we have, which are golf clubs, those are more year-round, you know, have a pool, trap shooting,
right.
Tennis,
yep.
Fitness, that sort of thing. So
mm-hmm.
Where the restaurants are more quirky and unique and kind of, you know, special.
Sure.
I mean, they're, you know, it's a really authentic amenity.
Right. Well, let's talk about the Wheels Up program and how you're shuffling your members to the different properties and taking care of them.
Yeah, it's interesting what's happened with Ken Deeker, who started Wheels Up. We approached him to partner, and we're one of the few clubs that has a partnership with them. And we just found that our members want a unique experience. And, you know, private jet service or private King Air service is relatively expensive, and it's hard to figure out how to do it on your own. So
sure.
When the union gets involved with the Wheels Up program, we sort of validate Wheels Up. We've got all the kinks out of it, and it's a one-stop shop and easy for our members to call our concierge and say, hey, I'm going to do a family reunion at the Greenbrier.
Yeah.
And had it, you know, I'd love to take, you know, it's our 50th wedding anniversary. It's more like those once in a lifetime, twice in a lifetime
sure.
type services.
Yep.
And it's value added.
Well, that's the perfect lead in to Frank Vane of the McMahon Group. Frank's going to talk to us about city clubs, especially, and what are some of the trends happening in city clubs, why we're seeing a resurgence around the country. Here's my interview with Frank.
Well, next up is Frank Vane. He's the president of the McMahon Group. He joins me here at the National Club Association's National Conference. Frank, how are you?
Doing great, thank
yeah.
you. Yeah,
enjoying
good.
Some of the sessions?
We are, yeah. It's been great. Great, lot of information, been an old diverse speaker group, and always fun to be in L.A.
So. Oh, always good times. We were at the California Club last night. Tonight you have the Jonathan Beach Club. So let's first talk about city clubs and the impact that they're starting to make in the industry.
Well, we really see a lot of changes happening. You know, it's really good, and a lot of it has to do with demographics. I've actually been really surprised. I hadn't been in downtown in Los Angeles in, I don't know, probably 30 plus years.
Wow.
Maybe. And, you know, I think that was there was about a bus stop here and a couple buildings, and, you know, there wasn't a whole lot going on. It's
sure.
always been a suburban car community, of course, you
right.
know. And but even you're seeing it here with the apartments and condos and all the development going on, and clearly the clubs we visited, Jonathan and California, it was actually the City Club of Los Angeles yesterday, well over 1,000 members, doing extremely well. So you know, we think the city clubs are being powered by demographics, what's happening there. Young folks want to be in cities, and the urbanization and everything that's going on there is really a powerful force for city clubs. And I think you've had a combination of a bit of a right sizing of the market.
Mm-hmm.
There are fewer city clubs, you know, so
right.
of course for those who remain, that's, you know, good news, market right sizing then. But really, I think you're going to see them rise to new heights again, given what's happening in downtown development.
I love talking to you, Frank, because we're always talking about trends, and I know you've got a great perspective on what's happening in the industry. So what are city clubs doing to really differentiate themselves right now?
Well, I think, you know, they're really responding to what's happening in the marketplace. Again, as always, innovating F&B, right? So they're developing spaces, and city clubs have such unique spaces and ways to create and use, you know, multi-story buildings that are often a couple hundred thousand square feet. So they have a lot of opportunity in reinventing those in ways into, for example, cafes, communication centers, all those sorts of things. I was recently at the Detroit Athletic Club. They have their version of a Starbucks in the Detroit Athletic Club. And it was the busiest room in the place.
Really?
And it was just, it had all that might, you know, express to you in your mind when you think about a Starbucks. There were people sitting there working on a laptop. There were people getting muffins and drinking coffee and having little informal gatherings and meetings and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, using spaces that way, certainly what they're doing in health, fitness, and wellness.
Sure.
You know, they're really trying to compete with, again, the great offerings, the Equinox and other people that are in these downtown environments,
mm-hmm.
but really modernizing their facilities in those regards to be, you know, kind of hip within
sure.
a traditional environment and,
right.
a club environment, but And I think they have a little easier time making that conversion because their sweet spot's a little younger than the country club.
Sure.
So
right.
That 30, 35, 40-year-old, you'll really see have some presence in a city club. And so they can modernize and adjust to those. And those that are doing it are really finding some good response.
Yeah. So we had Jeff from the Union League Philadelphia on.
What a great example that is, right?
Are you seeing some other clubs take a similar approach where the Union League Philadelphia bought up a number of properties, golf properties and vacation rentals and things? Are you seeing that as a trend?
Yeah, a little bit. City clubs have the numbers to do that. So, you know, they're often can be the acquirer, the larger club. But yeah. The Wisconsin club runs a wonderful program and has a city country club environment also. And they've done a couple great things. One, connecting with their downtown. I mean, the club runs a shuttle throughout downtown Milwaukee.
Wow.
And
that's
multiple,
amazing.
And multiple shuttles, actually.
How many stops are there?
I don't know whether it's a fixed schedule or, you know, as requested, but I believe they have about 5 shuttles they run through town.
That's impressive.
And it is. And what they visualize themselves is as a gateway to activities in the city. So if you're coming to the city, come to the club, have something to eat, land there, get in the shuttle, go to a basketball game, go to a concert, whatever, come back to the club, and again, use the club.
It becomes the hub.
It becomes that portal to that experience.
That's brilliant.
You know?
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think you'll see more. It's kind of an interesting sort of shoes on the other foot environment. When city clubs were really struggling in the 90s, they went and approached country clubs, and the country clubs had no interest because they were sort of booming in the golf days and all that sort of thing. And today it's the other way around. The country clubs often are looking for an answer, and the city clubs are, you know, resurgent in a lot of ways. And so I think you're going to see that conversation spark up again, and I think you'll see more sort of marriages as they do that. And that's a good one. You hear a lot about mergers and acquisitions and all that. Well, you know, owning 2 country clubs is, you know, not necessarily a great answer. It's not kind of business where economies of scale and all that are real present. You get a lot of the capital that comes along with that. But combining the city and the country, it really offers a lot
of
opportunity.
It's nice to get the best of both worlds in a way. That's kind of cool.
It is. And you can get the geographic diversity. Missouri Athletic Club in St. Louis has a town club and also has a suburban, you know, family club here tonight, right? The Jonathan Club right around the corner from us here today, and we'll be out at the Jonathan Club Beach Club tonight.
Right.
And I visited that club, the Beach Club, on Sunday, and just families were everywhere, kids were everywhere, all that sort of thing. Well, you can get that, but you can also come into town here and get the, you know, the true urban environment with that. And so
that's nice.
That's a value add that's really, really strong.
Absolutely. So I've seen a ton of research that McMahon Group is putting out these days. Can you talk about some of the studies and surveys you've been conducting?
Yeah, you know, I think one takeaway from that, I was just mentioning to somebody here earlier, we've looked at the results, and so we've maintained a database for a long period of time. And what's impressive overall is the higher level of satisfaction among members in clubs today than there was 10 or 15 years
ago. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, it shows that the industry has responded, is thinking about responding. Areas that particularly were sort of variants of, you know, kind of tolerance, or we weren't sure what we're doing. Food and beverage, for example, it was never real clear as to what its role was. And we used to even talk about having country club food, you know, as if that was sort of another segment that we could survive in, you know.
Right.
And what you're finding today is the food quality ratings are higher, the service ratings are higher and all that, because clubs have recognized the importance of that department. So so I think it's noteworthy as to how much more satisfaction there is among the memberships today. And we have to do it, right? And we keep doing it. And we've had a lot of speakers here today talk about, you know, the notion of exceptional performance and all of those sorts of things. And I think clubs are hearing that message, and I think they're delivering on that message in many ways. So I think that's a big piece of it. The other, and you know, which indicates why they need to do that, are certainly, you know, continuing the changing values and expectations of the newer members.
Yeah.
We continue to see in our surveys, when you segment those by younger members and recent joiners, that the priorities are different than they are for the members who've been there for a long time or who are older.
Right.
And so in that environment, you see things like, you know, golf being sixth or seventh on the list as a reason as to why they joined the club. Now, golf's not going to go away, and golf is repositioning and responding in a variety of ways. But, you know, we need to pay attention to the fact that they're coming to us for family, for the food and beverage, for health and wellness, and
pools.
All those sorts
yep.
of things. Pools,
yep.
I mean, you know, we call the pool the gateway amenity. You know, I say today, you want to attract a new young family to your club, it's, you know, it's a great investment. And, and not only because we think about access to a pool, well, again, the people we deal with, I think, have access to water. They can figure out how to get in a pool. But can they get in a pool with people that, you know, shared values or on a swim team or, you know, those sorts of things that are really about community and relationship building, you know, and all those investments drive that. And I think we'll continue to see that.
Right. The great cornerstone. Absolutely. Well, Frank, people want to get in touch with the McMahon Group and maybe you specifically, how they do that.
Sure. Can reach us at McMahonGroup.com is the website, M-C-M-A-H-O-N, group.com. And I'm at fvane@McMahonGroup.com.
Yep. And I absolutely would recommend Club Trends, the publication that McMahon Group puts out quarterly, I believe.
Quarterly publication.
That's one of my favorites out there.
Good,
so definitely take a subscription there. Frank, so much.
Gabe, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to my voice during these interviews for the first time since it happened, and I sound downright giddy. And it's because I was. There's such a cool energy and vibe happening at the National Club Conference. You've got to be there to really experience it. If you don't know much about the NCA, definitely recommend you check out their website, nationalclub.org. They are such a wealth of information, news, highlights, updates. I really enjoy it. I love getting their email blasts. A couple times a week, they have industry information and education that they're sharing, along with updates to what's happening with legal issues and government issues in Washington, D.C. So definitely subscribe to their e-newsletter. All right, well, we are going to change gears a little bit here and talk golf. If you are a golf gear nut like I am, I'm a geek for golf gear, you're going to love my interview with Mike Stachura of Golf Digest. Here's Mike.
Mike, welcome to Private Club Radio.
Thanks, Gabe. My pleasure.
You were just up with the CEO of Callaway talking about some of the innovations that they're coming out with. When you're looking into all the new stuff out there on the market, Are these new innovations good for the game? Does it really actually add to the enjoyment of the game?
Well, I mean, I think there's two things at work. Golf has a very long, almost tradition of innovation. Now, that can mean things that say they're innovative and things that truly are innovative, but the perception that there is some magic golf club out there is part of the heritage of the game. So I think it's just woven into the fabric of the game, and then I think that's a good thing. Secondly, there is more intellectual horsepower in golf club innovation now this week than there has been in the previous 100 years.
Wow.
And I think at the end of the day, that the benefit of that innovation is going to be better products. And really where they're going to be better products is not so much for elite players, but for the paying customer. And I think that's the hardest part of innovation, okay? The hardest part, it's easy to innovate when you're innovating for perfection, okay?
Sure.
Because you have a repeating swing, and I know this is going to happen, so I'm going to innovate this way.
Right.
But if I have to innovate based on an unlimited range of possible impacts, that gets really difficult, and I need a lot of smart people to help me figure that out. But I think that's where the innovation is happening, because that's where we all live, and two, that's where it's happening because the ruling bodies have pretty much said, okay, the perfect hit, that's where we're going to draw the limit.
Right.
But we're going to be a little bit more, have a little bit more freedom on the areas that are not perfect. So
right.
That's got to be great for average golfers
yeah.
like you and me. Yeah.
Is your bag constantly evolving, you know, of things that you actually play with, just depending on what you're hitting, you're testing out, or how does it work?
We have a process at Golf Digest for the hot list where we have a team of people that are involved in evaluating clubs. So it's the hot list isn't about Mike Stachura says, this works for me, so it goes right to the top of the list. Mm-hmm. I do, as a necessary requirement of my existence, if I am not trying out a new product every time I go to the driving range or the golf course, I'm not doing my job. Hmm. And so I have plenty of opportunities to try new products. I wouldn't recommend that as the best way to improve your game.
Right.
I recommend going to see a fitter and getting dialed in specifically to the right clubs and sticking with that set of clubs until such time that those clubs don't seem to work anymore for you. Mm-hmm. But yes, it is a constant challenge to try something new, and I think that certainly keeps me inspired to, because I am flat out floored that they have thought of something new again.
Right. What is getting you excited right now in the market?
I think I'm really intrigued by a couple of things. I think I'm really intrigued about this thing that we've been talking about, that the idea of improving the off-center hit in a way that is getting closer and closer to the center hit. And that's happening not just in drivers, it's happening in irons, and it's happening, believe it or not, even in putters. So I think that's a key element. I think there is a whole other area that has nothing to do with clubs and balls, and we're talking about the GPS app, the thing that Game Golf is doing and the thing that Arcos is doing, where they're literally at the point now where they're bringing artificial intelligence to the way those apps work. Cool. So that you will have essentially a virtual caddy that not is just kind of making blanket recommendations, but literally club selection based not only on how people have traditionally played this hole, but how you play golf. Mm-hmm. So if you have a hybrid that you can't hit very well, it knows that. And it's going to say, you know what, even this is a short par four, I still want you to hit driver.
Wow.
Because your success rate is going to be better. And the amazing thing about AI in golf is that nobody really knows how it works. It's like this cake that you just put the kitchen sink of ingredients into, and it spits out a recommendation that the smartest human caddy with the most experience, who has only caddied for your entire life, couldn't even come up with that same answer.
And it's doing it in milliseconds.
And exactly. So I think we're at a brave new world where that aspect.
How far along down the road is that technology?
Well, in a sense, it exists currently. Yeah. Arcos has Arcos Caddy already part of their portfolio of things. Game Golf is introducing this month their smart caddy. So these things are out in the marketplace, and it's really now at a stage where the USGA is going to step in and say, well, this much AI is okay, and this much is too much. But right. I think from an average golfer standpoint, I think the argument can be made that we need to explore this technology, because it's a new way to get better, okay?
Yeah.
It's not just, oh, here's not lots of information. It's all of a sudden I'm learning how far I actually hit my 7-iron or how much the wind affects
how consistent
drive,
you are.
How consistent you are, what I need to work on.
Right.
It's literally mapped out after every round. Here's where your weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a key aspect. And then the interconnectivity with your teacher.
Right.
Your teacher can see that information now. And all of a sudden you show up for a lesson and there's no 10-minute process. Hey, what are you working at?
Yeah.
He says, listen, hey, I just saw your readout from Arcos. You need to spend some time in the bunker.
It's fascinating.
And so, I mean, I think we're at a brave new moment for rapid improvement in average golfers.
Wow, that's cool. I've actually given some talks on artificial intelligence, never really thought of it in those terms. That's incredible. For the average golfer, and I know average is a pretty vague term, but, right. You know, let's say you had a choice, right, to spend some money. You're going to buy a driver, a set of irons, wedges, or a putter. Where do you think people would get their most value right now in terms of game improvement?
Well, I think the one thing that people don't think about is the club that you use the most is the putter.
Mm-hmm.
And the club that's easiest to get fit for is the putter.
Sure.
So, and not only that, it's the cheapest to get fit for.
And it's probably the cheapest club in the – well, it doesn't have necessarily, but it can,
It's trending.
Right.
But so I think the putter is an unexplored option. I wouldn't say it's necessarily going to be a dramatic sea mm-hmm. change in your game.
Yep.
But I we all lose a lot of strokes around and on the green. So I think look at the putter as a dramatic area to improve your game. Mm-hmm. I would say, again, sticking around the greens, people's – distance gaps with their wedges are way off. You know, people will have a pitching wedge and a sand wedge, and there's 10 degrees of no club.
Wow.
And that's a huge mistake when you're trying to talk, when you're talking about why you score.
Sure.
And then, quite honestly, I don't think you can answer the question of what segment of your bag you should improve without looking at which segment of your bag hasn't been changed recently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or how poor your game is in that area,
I guess, right? and you certainly, you know, lessons are certainly a part of this whole conversation. Yeah. But if you haven't got a new driver in 5 years and you think, well, this is just good enough because they really haven't, you know, the rules haven't changed, mm-hmm. you know, well, again, what we talked about initially, they've improved the area where you miss it.
Yeah.
So, and the beauty of technology today is you take your old driver into your fitter and say, beat it. And either he does or he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And you can then choose to decide whether if that advantage is worth buying or not. But right. the fact is, in cold, hard numbers, the answer is there.
That's awesome. Mike, I really appreciate your insight, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Gabe. Appreciate it.
Nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
All right, I loved that one. Now we're going to bring on some folks that I see at every single industry event, basically, that I attend. It's EA Photography. I'm sure you know of them. Maybe you don't know their story, and you maybe don't know why they're such an important service to the private club industry. But here's my interview with John
I never
Harvey,
get to a conference or an industry event without seeing you guys events. There.
Well,
it's amazing.
It certainly seems like we are, and we try to be, you know, as at many different places as we can. Absolutely.
You guys are extremely visible. And the other thing I like to do is, so I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and if I'm trying to find connections within the private club industry, whether it's managers, membership directors, or whatnot, I usually look for that blue background. It's
that is one of the things we're shooting for, that's for sure, you know.
It's like amazing consistency with all the work you guys do. Why is consistency so important?
Well, you know, we've been in business for since 1945, and many times we work with clubs. You know, we don't go out every year. We'll go out every 3 years, every 5 years, and it just enables us to deliver a product that is always consistent, you know, whether it's this year, last year, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, I mean, you're going to see the similarities. You're going to recognize the portraiture, you know. That's kind of like one of our signatures.
Yeah. So for those who don't know EA Photography, you guys go out and you do headshots of members in the entire club and the staff and all sorts of things. So what are some of the ways that clubs are using your work?
Well, you know, the main idea of our program is to help everyone get to know each other by name. Not only the members with one another, but the staff and the members, you know, upper management, mid management, whatnot. The way that they utilize them there too. A lot of clubs, you know, before it was always printed directories, but that's kind of going by the wayside now.
Right.
Online directories, web directories with their social media. You know, oftentimes they'll have like a digital monitor, like let's say in the men's lounge. And they'll have, you know, like their top golfer, you know, they'll showcase his picture, you know
right.
what I mean?
Yep.
To try to feature the members, you know.
Yeah.
And then also with our program, we give them an album too, like in the lobby, and then training books for the staff. So the concept is to just try to help everyone, like I said, get to know who everyone else is. I mean, to, you know, enhance, you know, you always hear the phrase, the club experience.
Sure.
You know, so.
I think it's so important, especially when you're training staff, that they very quickly start to learn the names of members, because that's what really separates, obviously, a private club from a restaurant or hotel environment.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. What other unique ways are people using your work out there?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm not sure about unique, just because we're so limited to only working with private clubs.
Yeah.
But like I said, other than just the recognition aspect, I mean, you know, the way that we stay in business, of course, is we offer fine portraiture. So I know that oftentimes members will, you know, you get the member that gets like a really fancy oil painting with their family or with their beloved pet.
Right.
You know what I mean, so I guess getting a, you know, 40 by 60 inch hand painted oil painting of of yourself with your favorite animal.
Sure.
I think that would be unique.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure. How many clubs have you guys worked with now?
Oh, gosh.
Probably a ton.
Yeah, thousands.
Wow.
Thousands. I mean, because we've been in business since 1945.
Right.
So certainly a long time. Wow. Definitely.
Any properties out there stand out to you? Just some iconic places that you really enjoyed shooting at for whatever reason?
Oh, gosh, there's just so many. There's just so many amazing clubs out there. It's really tough to put up.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, just to pick one, and it really depends too, because you've got the Northeast. Mm-hmm. Or you've got the clubs that were built in the 1700s, 1800s,
right?
And then you have the in Florida where they just built a year ago, and
right.
It's just palatial. Insane. You're like, you know, it's like you're in Dubai or
right.
something. You know,
yeah.
Really. And then just kind of all different other types of clubs in between. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just really, really an interesting industry for me. You
yeah,
know?
It's amazing that you focused really on one part of the photography experience too, which is really the head shot. Was there a conscious decision behind that?
Well, I mean, back when we first started, we started off as a film studio in Hollywood, California, where I think primarily our main business were law firms,
sure,
hospitals,
yep,
you know, photographing like the upper board of directors, that type of thing,
right?
The staff, and then like attorneys, whatnot. Because we used to do directories for that, and I think it was just made sense to transition from that into working in the private club industry.
Right. What gets you excited every day? Because when you're doing headshots, I got to imagine at some point they all kind of run together, right? But what keeps you excited and motivated?
I guess you just really never know who you're going to meet, you know? And
yeah.
That really amazing part of it is that, and only like this, like being able to be here and speaking with you.
Sure.
I get to see you all over the country.
Yep.
I guess you just never know who you're going to meet. I mean, sometimes you run into celebrities, you know,
right.
Clubs, you just never know.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually. Who is the most famous person you photographed?
Well, I'd say probably the most recognizable one that I would say was, like, we used to have the centerpiece of our booth was Jack Nicholson.
Mm, yeah. Very cool.
in the 90s, you know,
wow.
We shot him.
Yeah.
I think at the, can't remember which club, but yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but I mean, we photographed John Wayne, we photographed, all kinds of attorneys, judges, doctors. You know, like
yeah.
I said, celebrities. I mean, we photographed Hillary Clinton when she was very young.
Oh,
like,
my goodness!
Still in law school.
Wow.
So yeah,
that's
just
cool.
All over the board.
And it's the same, like it's that same consistent portrait.
Oh.
So if you get your portrait with EA Photography, you'll have one just like John Wayne, Hillary Clinton, Jack Nicholson. That's pretty cool.
That's true. Absolutely.
Something
man.
To be said yeah. for that for
yeah.
sure. Well, I enjoyed it. How do folks get in touch with EA?
You know, the easiest way is just to just go online, and it's just EAclubs.com.
Cool.
You know, and of course, I'm John, so just john@eaclubs.com, and you'll
cool.
get right to me.
Book a session today. Thanks,
yeah,
John.
Right on.
Good
Thank
to speak
you so
with
much.
Man.
Such a nice guy. If you see him at the next conference, be sure and say hello and get your headshot from EA. Well, we're going to wrap up the NCA conference episodes with Bill McMahon Jr., who gives us his take.
Well, joining me right now is Bill McMahon Jr., Vice
NCA
President
conference.
Of the McMahon
Bill.
Group. Bill, how are you enjoying the conference so far?
It's great. You know, being in LA is one of my favorite spots in the country. So anytime you come to where movies are made, it's fun. I know you're a fan of movies as well. So it's interesting.
Yeah, we got to go on that 3D tour, Real D tour.
Real D, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
That was neat. It was just different how, you know, all the different elements that come together to show us a movie. So
right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a secret, but you shared a little bit that you've been into movies as well your whole life.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I mean, as far as back as through high school, my buddies and I would actually make movies together. I have one of those guys out here today making movies, a friend of mine. And he's a director and producer and all that fun stuff. And so I had a passion, studied a little bit in college, a
yep.
little script writing, a little history of film. I love the early days of film.
Yeah.
A lot. That's one of my favorite subjects.
Yeah, we're here in the Millennium Biltmore, and there's a lot of history. Obviously, they
yeah.
had the Academy Awards here, I think the first
yeah.
ever Academy Awards in the room that the conference
yeah,
is having.
They had pictures down the hallway. It was really neat.
Yeah, that's yeah. really cool. So what are some of the sessions that you've most enjoyed here?
I really enjoy listening to Bill Walsh from the
Viceroy Hotel
yeah.
Group. Yep.
He had some really interesting things to say, you know. Even for a company like ours, you know,
yeah.
to aspire to, and you know, doing really thinking strategically in different ways, you know, that the idea of the stop, start, continue ideal was very interesting. Something I, you know,
so try to flesh that out for us for folks that weren't in the
yeah.
room.
Yeah, and so it was really about just looking your company in the mirror, meeting on a regular basis, and deciding, you know, putting up on a board he said flip charts, but, you know, in today's world, yeah. Computer screens have, you know, a screen that says stop, one that says start, one that's continue. And looking at things you're doing as a company, if you should stop, start, or continue doing them. And he said, if you have everything in continue, that's a bad sign. Mm. You know, you need to continue to look at things. You know, we all get into the habit of doing, like, the weekly meetings or whatever we do in weekly,
right,
or however it happens at your club or group. But it was, why are we doing it? Taking a step back, is this beneficial to what we're doing? Is it making the experience for our customers, members better?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really interesting. I don't know if you liked that one too.
That
was good.
I enjoyed that one. I also liked, let's see, you had the Callaway and
yeah.
gentleman, he was here, and then Mike Statura from Golf Digest.
Yeah,
that was a good conversation.
Those two had a good one-on-one. They know each other as well.
Yeah, it's been.
I was listening, looking forward to Peter Ubera. I thought that was a. The guy's done so much.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, commissioner of baseball. He brought the Olympics to Los Angeles back in the 80s or whatever. And yeah, it's been an interesting lineup here. And that's what I like so much about this conference is there's just a depth and a breadth of education you're not going to see elsewhere. Well, let's talk about McMahon Group and some of the trends and things that you guys are spotting. I love reading your reports and the magazine you guys put out.
Sure.
So what are some things you're seeing out there, Bill?
Yeah, well, some of the, you know, a shameless plug, our latest edition of the Club Trends, the Outlook for 18, is out now. You know, one of the things, you know, it covers a wide range of trends, you know, why bringing members together. And one of them, the other one is the whole idea of a pool complex and what that is and how important swimming has become. Not so much the pool itself, but everything around it. So, you know, Frank Vane, our president, you know, has coined the term, it's the gateway amenity to really attract that next generation in.
Right.
They really value that so much when they're looking at a club. Our survey data shows those members under 46, it's the second most important feature at the club to them.
It's incredible.
So that's different. You know, that's amazing. And it's not golf. You know,
right.
Golf's important, but it's not. They don't have the time yet. I'm in that group. In that group.
I wish I had more time.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a big thing. And, you know, what we're seeing is we do a lot of capital projects and capital campaigns. It's really that whole complex is just transformed. You always hear the resort style, but it's really a place to bring members together. You know, my club Belle Reve, you know, we turned our towel shack basically into a full service bar.
Nice.
And it became really the way that the pool's, you know, the clubhouse wraps around the pool and it's close to the driving range. And as members come off the course, what happened was, you know, during the summer, people coming off the course or coming off the driving range, instead of the men going up to the grill room upstairs, they would all hang out at the pool. Families are there. It's just had a real vibrant atmosphere. They all of a sudden they started serving food from the upstairs, and so we're seeing that all around. A lot of our projects are, how do we improve the pool experience?
Right.
It's such an important feature.
I'd like to have a swim up bar. That'd be kind of fun.
You know what? That'll probably be coming somewhere, somehow. It's baby steps in our industry.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting. That would be a fun thing, I would imagine.
You know, let's talk about some of the more exciting projects you've got going on. I know you're doing some work here locally.
Yeah. We're doing here the Bel Air Country Club. We're working with them. They're doing a facility campaign right now. Working with Los Angeles Tennis Club, you know, doing some membership research there. So, you know, we're all around.
Yeah.
You know,
when you walk into a place, do you see it from a different perspective? Are you looking at fixtures and the carpeting and things like that
a
normal person doesn't really look at?
Yeah, I pay attention. I'll look on like the windowsill, and if it's like dusty or, you know, dead bugs or whatever, it's attentive to, you know, attention to detail is so important. I see that, and you can just get a feel. And you, like you said, you look at the carpets in some of these places, and you know, and clubs just are in different positions in their stature. So it's just interesting.
Yeah, you guys do quite a bit of first impressions reports and things like that. Why is that so important for a club to undertake a first impression report?
Well, it's very valuable for them. Just to have us come in with all our experience, whether it's myself, Frank Vane, my dad, Richard LaRoe, all of us come in, tour the facilities. We comment on things we see, like we're talking about, and talk with the management, talk with staff, and really provide recommendations. You know, And that's why they're bringing us in, obviously, sure. to look at it. But it's to bring that experience and really have the opportunity for the board to talk to us, yeah. to ask us questions. What's going on in the industry? Because you can read about it, but to hear from us and ask any question, really, what we're seeing, what do we recommend they do? Because every club's, as you know, unique, and that's what they should be. They should be unique.
It's good. It's so important, I think, to have that third party perspective that you, because sometimes you're just in it every day. You just don't see the bugs on the windowsill. Yeah. Well, hopefully you do, but.
Well, that's what a manager said. You know, it's helpful for like us to come in to reinforce the message that they're trying to portray. And it makes sense. Yep. You know, they keep hearing it from the same, but someone from the outside brings in the third
party. It resonates a little bit.
It does. Yeah. It does. In our experience, you know, being around for over 35 years, so.
You've
helps.
Seen it all.
Yeah.
What other trends are you spotting out there?
Well, it's really, you know, like we heard yesterday, you know, the issue of time is we hear that a lot.
Sure.
That's affecting everyone and not just club life, but what you're doing in real life.
Yep.
And so, you know, again, what we heard a lot today from different yesterday from different speakers was the idea of like Topgolf. Mm-hmm. And we've investigated. We've done some designs on that ourselves.
Have you?
And for some clubs, and it's not a Topgolf like facility. I mean, the amenities around it are much more country club like, so it'll blend in with the architecture of what you have. But it's about bringing members together, making golf fun,
right?
And
getting the whole family involved, basically.
And,
you
know, with what Top Golf is doing, not just the, you know, hitting out on the range, but they have, like we heard yesterday, they have all the technology, all the content they're building, like building in like the video games and the whole idea of simulators are going to take off. I was I just saw recently someone has a skiing simulator or snowboarding simulator.
That's so cool. I'd like to see that. Do that.
A massive screen.
Yeah.
And just think about that. All the different things you could do around a social environment to bring people together, whether it's the skiing or the golf or, you know, kids can shoot golf balls and blow up aliens flying into space. Those are the things that are being
developed.
That's
cool.
Right
it doesn't have to just be another golf simulator.
I've
seen them like you break windows. Like you have to hit different types of low shots and high shots to try to break different windows on different levels and stuff.
And it makes sense. I mean, that's what, you know, especially that younger generation with the kiddos like we have. And that's what they want. They want something fun. And and the hope is, like with Topgolf, is they... You get some of them to take that next step, and I want to try this out. Some go further, really play the game.
It's another gateway, like you said about the pool. I think.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think it will be. The whole, you know, embracing technology is so important,
right?
Especially for clubs. You know, we've talked about that many times. It's got to embrace the technology, especially today with the millennials. That group, as they come in to their club joining years, that's going to be very critical.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate your perspective and joining me here at the National Club Association.
Well, thank you for having me, Gabe. I appreciate it.
Wow, what a cool group of folks, right? I enjoyed each and every one of those interviews that you've heard these last 3 weeks. I hope once again you will check out the nationalclub.org website, see what they're doing, and get involved. It's a fantastic organization. That's going to do it from LA. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'll catch you back here next week. Till then, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by Concert Golf Partners, helping to preserve and enhance private golf and country clubs. Concert Golf has the capital, expertise, and private club hospitality experience to help upscale private clubs achieving long-term success and membership growth. For 25 years, Concert Golf has allowed private club members to focus on simply enjoying their club. Visit concertgolfpartners.com to learn more about the recapitalization process.